February 4th, 2018, it's a Watt from Pedro show. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, there you go.
You're back in action.
Back in action, yeah. First show of February 2018.
Beautiful day.
People
are freezing back there. We got a nice... We've got Cleveland in the house.
We got Cleveland.
Escaping the snow to come to Pedro.
3 to 5 inches today.
We start off the show with a John Coltrane doing Training In, Live Stockholm, 1963. Then we had Sad Planets, Out of This World, which is a new project. John Pekovich. Tell us something about Small Planets.
Sad Planets.
Sad Planets.
But it's, it's
Small Faces.
It's like, it's weird, you know, it's just a project that I'm doing with Pat, a friend of mine, Patrick Carney, and he's the nephew of Ralph Carney. And we actually became friends after, many years ago through Ralph, because Ralph played on Cobra Verde Records. And so that Pat lives in Akron and I live in Cleveland.
I think Ralph Carney was Tin Huey.
He was Tin Huey, yeah.
Which most people don't know, but there was an Akron scene.
An Akron, yeah.
Numbers band.
The weird thing is, the Cleveland and Akron scene were both so intertwined.
Yeah.
A lot of those bands played together. Devo would play a lot with Perry in Cleveland. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's seen
as... brother was the numbers guy, right?
What's that? Kidney. Robert Kidney is in there, yeah. Yeah, and Chrissy Hynde's brother, Terry Hynde, also played a numbers band. But, you know, it's like, it's a weird thing because I was actually was born in Akron, and so I've always had this, like...
We did have a band come to Hollywood in the early 80s called Rubber City Rebels.
Rubber City, yeah, they had. And they were an Akron band, too.
They were trying to make it, and
yeah.
They would always...
And they were
really
like,
have a special sound, but they used to.
But the thing is, the Rubber City Rebels were big. They were good friends with the Dead Boys. It's like weird. Every band had like a. There was almost like sister cities in a way, but they also had sister bands in a way. You know, like Devo and Perubu would play. Rubber City Rebels would play with the Dead Boys and the Pagans, who lived. Mike Hudson passed away a couple months
ago. Here in SoCal.
Yeah, he lived out here.
His last years, he was doing writing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and he was a good friend of mine.
He ran
too.
A newspaper for a while, I think, in up to Hudson or up
in Niagara Falls. He was like a guy who ran this. He was a Niagara Falls guy.
No, when I brought the Italian guys.
What's that?
When I brought, you know, I sell you to Marinaio, we were going from Buffalo to.
Yeah.
Or Cleveland to Buffalo, and we go by. And they, Niagara.
Yeah, Niagara. Yeah, Niagara. That's what my parents did all the time. So, like, as kids, we'd always. You know, the thing is, it's so weird. I thought about Niagara Falls driving around Los Angeles yesterday. I was driving it in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
I was doing photos, taking photos, and I have this fear of heights. It's insane.
So do I.
It's but I the reason this started. I was a kid. I tried to jump into Niagara Falls, but my brother pulled me out.
Good.
And because I was like trying to get close, I always wanted to get good sight of something and take good. I didn't have a camera or anything, but I was even as a kid. I was like, and my brother pulled me out, and I was like, today I was just every time I go. Yesterday, every time I drive in mountains and hills, I always have these flashbacks to when, like, I almost fell in Niagara Falls or Niagara, as my family's from Serbia, from former Yugoslavia. So they'd always go, idemo u Niagara, you know, like, it was like this big thing.
Well, they don't understand that it's actually a native word, and then we're using the English language that follows no fucking consistent vowel rules.
Yeah.
Niagara. But then we say shit like panini.
Yeah.
You know, that's sandwiches.
Yeah.
Have some sandwiches. Yeah, what, about 30 or 40 of them? Yeah. You know. look, let me ask you, your earliest music memory. Fuck the sad planet.
Okay.
We'll get to that.
But the thing is, as a kid, man, I love music as from when I was
yeah,
like,
what's
so
your earliest
young.
Memory?
This song called Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Oh, yeah.
This 45.
The guy just passed away. Who sang
oh, really?
That.
The Tokens.
I love that 45.
They were
like
teenagers.
They were?
They were really
Oh, I didn't
young.
Know that. Yeah, but it was my favorite song. I'd listen to it like I probably was, I don't know, like 3 years old or something like that. And then
like coming on the radio, or did your folks have?
No, I bought me a 45. My godfather bought me a 45.
Okay. What's the first record you bought yourself?
The Beatles' Help. There's a single called Help. And, no. I'm Down. I remember I'm Down.
And where'd you buy it?
Because it was the
I'm
B side.
Where you bought it?
It was the B side of Help. I think I'm
did
Down.
You buy it at a record store. Or
at
did
a record
you buy
store.
It at a drug store.
At a record store. Okay. The one in part. Because
I bought my first 45.
Yeah.
They used to sell these things
at
drug stores.
Dude, I did too. There's a compilation called Do It Now. This compilation that I bought at a drug store. I mean, I grew up in Parma, this town that everyone makes fun of. They call me Parmesan. You know, like, you know, yeah, it's funny. They go, oh, he's Parmesan. And
Parma's an Italian town.
But it's like Parma is like...
That's where we get Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, Parmesan. So that's what they call me. So it's cheesy, but that's what they call it. But anyway, it's funny.
It's dry cheese.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's so funny. Like, Parma is made fun of by everyone in Cleveland. It's for a long time, it's seen as a working class, kind of like a dump. But it had so many...
Palookaville.
Yeah, Palookaville. But it had so many great comic book shops, poster stores... record stores, there's a movie theater. It was like a real hub for, it wasn't a hub for high art, but it was a hub for B culture and weird culture. And man, I'd buy records. I remember, and the thing is people always say, what is that record that changed your life? And like, well, I don't think a record changed.
I ain't gonna ask you that.
No, but I always thought record covers, man, as a kid, there's a record store, when I found that Velvet Underground Loaded record, I saw that picture, I go, man, I don't even know what the Velvet Underground sounded like.
Third
That's
out.
What, people, I didn't need a Big Brother, it's like, I want to buy that.
Yule Brothers, right?
Yeah. But I love that record. Then I go, oh man, White Light, White Heat. Wow, who would do a cover like this? This is so cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it had embossed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It
and had, I just stare at the covers and stuff.
Brother Matt, it's kind of like embossed. It was kind of higher.
Mm.
I guess it's the fucking scissors going to the dude's head.
And you know, the weird thing, then I saw the Rock and Roll Animal. I saw the Transformer. I saw the Stooges. The first record I bought was Raw Power, because I just saw all these. Oh, and Queen, and I go, man, these are so cool. And it was all Mick Rock that took the photos, you know.
Oh, yeah, right.
So that's why I just started buying. I bought so much shit, and it's like,
in fact, those are the only pictures of the gig. That's your only.
Yeah.
Okay, talk about gigs. What was the first gig you went to?
As a kid.
Or as an old man. I mean, what's the first gig?
The first gig I went to was, man, I probably saw, I think I saw AC/DC as a kid. I saw, but the first, like, rock concerts I started to see, I saw the Gang of Four. I'd get fake IDs right away. Is that Gang of Four was the first show? Oh, man. But some of the weird thing is.
You didn't
see
arena rock stuff.
Not really, no.
It's okay.
No, I didn't really. But so the first punk rock shows that I saw.
I just mean when you see people play instruments.
Yeah, but the Minutemen was one of the first like punk rock shows. But then also there's bands that play in Akron. Akron again is Akron and Cleveland had a real. Like I always thought affinity with Akron because I thought Devo was from there. You know, I love Tin Huey and all these weirdo bands. The Bizarros was like, that was a great name. It's like they live up to the you could tell the cover the book by this cover because they were the Bizarros and they're bizarre. And I was like, so I go down to Akron and I loved Akron.
I don't know, Berserkly. I remember there was that label and some of that stuff was kind of great. Kin.
But dude, but check this out. But so Akron to me was like the coolest place because Akron looked like some place that had not changed since like 1962. It was like all the buildings, and it still hasn't. We could drive down. If I took you out on a tour of Akron, you'd say, man, the only thing these buildings look like, they look weathered and broken down.
I'll tell you about Akron that's close to a college, Kent.
Yeah.
Right, Kent State. I remember playing a place called Mother's. D. Boom bought a Telecaster in Kent.
Yeah. Ohio. I saw that show that you guys played.
Mother's.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the only time we played that town.
Yeah.
And D-Boom got a Telecaster.
I love Kent. I love the shows. But what I'm saying is I used to go to these punk shows, and I didn't even know, like, it's like there's people throwing shows in basements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So as a kid, and I couldn't, my brother drove, older brother would drive, and I'd go,
what about playing? Was there instruments in the house?
My parents grew up in a very, there was an accordion. I played clarinet as a kid. I started playing clarinet at the age of.
You did clarinet later, too.
I played clarinet when I was like 7. Okay. And the thing is, it's funny. I started playing.
How'd you get on the clarinet? School or?
I went to the music store. They said, we should have our son learn a little bit about music. Yeah. Even though my parents hated rock and roll. They absolutely hated rock and roll.
Yeah, but they like slab music, polka, cola.
No, not really. I mean, they were not really.
The Serbs are big on the brass band stuff.
They dig the brass band music. That's what they like. But they go, so then I went to the music store. Okay, we want you to pick out an instrument to play. And I like, clarinet. Oh, clarinet's a beautiful instrument. We like clarinet. I go, how about piano? And I like piano a lot. And I go, and I started playing notes. And I just started, I always would sing along. Even when I didn't have music, I just play along to any, like I had like a, any kind of string things that would make the sound of rubber bands and sing along to them. So I just started playing the piano, and I started singing, but I couldn't play the piano, and I couldn't sing. And they're like,
you know what? There's a piano in the house?
No, at a music store. They said, you want to take lessons playing piano?
Okay.
You want to take lessons playing piano? Well, here, try it out. And I started singing like I do. I'd sing the rubber bands as a kid.
Okay.
And they go, my God, this kid is so bad.
How are you going to sing with a clarinet in your mouth?
Well, that's why they had me play the clarinet, because they knew that my voice, they thought my voice was so awful. They were like, this kid.
Ah, you're a good singer, John.
No, man. They thought it was so bad. And then I first played my first show. Death of Samantha played our first show. I worked at a restaurant called the Ground Round. You guys ever hear it? It was a chain restaurant around the country. I was a janitor.
Midwest.
And I got fired for that job 4 times. And finally, the last time was when my band played, and they told me, don't ever come back. But I'd always get fired. But I was a good worker, but they thought I was a smartass, you know?
Yeah.
So the boss, the main boss, he'd make fun of, you have these terrible bands, you listen to this garbage music all the time. I had a radio, I'd listen to this garbage music, he thought. And so you listen to this garbage music, so, hey, when I'm on vacation, how about you get your band to play here? And he was joking, making fun of me, because he thought I couldn't play or had no talent. But one of the assistant managers heard that, and he was this guy, very earnest, very straight, he believed everything. And he goes, so when that guy left, he goes, so when's your band playing? I go, I guess we're going to play Tuesday. Yeah, for wings night. They had wings night, chicken wing night, on Tuesday. And we didn't even have a band. It was me and two other guys that started Death Samantha. We were just jamming in a basement. We didn't even have songs. We would make noise. And we played this thing. We go, let's bring our equipment. And we put on, we didn't have a name of a band or anything. The guy goes, how about Death of Samantha? I go, that'll look good on the marquee, because they put these letters up on the marquee, like Potato Skins, $3.99, and then Death of Samantha. And it was like, the crazy thing is, back then you put like, they were like, what the hell is Death of Samantha? Like, they probably thought someone of the staff's died or something like that. The field college. So we had this chicken wing night. and it was so bad sounding. Yeah. I mean, to these guys, it's bad. Because they're like coming in for their chicken wings. They still throwing chicken wings. They're like, these guys are grabbing his popcorn. They had these free popcorn you could give away, one of the places where you did the free popcorn and peanuts. They started throwing peanuts at us and popcorn.
No, they didn't go over good.
It did not go over well at all. But everyone left. And if people left, they got mad. They didn't pay their bills. And the waitresses got so mad. They're like, this guy, he's like, this guy's an asshole. He's just like doing this to cause trouble. He's trying to ruin our tips. Yeah. And I got fired after that. That was the last time I worked there. But anyways, the thing is, it's so funny is suddenly this band, where you think about punk rock, I never thought about punk rock. To me, I loved Alice Cooper. I loved Creedence Clearwater Revival, and the Cramps were the same band to me. Flipper, Velvet Underground, White Light, White Heat, and Velvet, and Flipper, it was the same band to me. I mean, like, Minutemen. You guys were just like, I don't know, like a rock and roll band. I didn't even think of it as being some weirdo music because I grew up as a kid. The first thing I loved Alice Cooper early on, and I'd go back to Yugoslavia a lot, where my family from. They'd always be playing me all this kind of music and stuff like that. So there was none of this punk, this and this. So the funny thing is, Death of Samantha, after we played his Chicken Wing Night, was the talk of the town in Cleveland. There were people wrote these stories about us and stuff. We were like this big band, like the punk provocateur band, and we had no interest in being provocateurs. I just was playing a Chicken Wing Night because I wanted to cause trouble at work, you know.
Yeah, and you did.
But anyways, we became this big celebrated band. We were a celebrated band. We had no songs.
Let's play Death Samantha. Come on. There was a scene there earlier. In fact, here's a cover you guys did. Amphetamine, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, that's our song.
It's not the Pete.
No, that's not the Pete Lauder, but he did a song. We didn't even know who he was. We did a song called Amphetamine because I was always so hyperactive. And
is obviously, he's been listening to Velvet Underground.
Yeah, of course. But you know the thing is?
Except heroin.
What?
He calls it amphetamine. I was going to say, yours is so different.
Yeah.
That was interpretation.
But you know the funny thing is, I know it was original, but that I was like always. I've always had this paranoia that I'm not. I want to do more, more, more. I've always been like I would never sleep, and so I would like even though I was hyperactive as a kid, I would still like always like I was into like taking speed and stuff as a kid.
Well, it seems like Peter was.
Yeah, I'm sure. But you know the funny thing is, that single we had the single we had a single out, and before the single even came out, Byron Coley. I don't know how he found out about this band, but he ordered like 25 copies.
Well, Byron was, he knew about Jandek and that.
We didn't even have a record out.
What Tippy was on. He was always.
He knew everything.
He was part of this kind of network.
Yeah.
Dudes, yeah.
So suddenly, like, these people were interested in this band, and it's like, well, it's not really a band.
Well, you know, yeah, but also the scene was small enough where you could keep track of the punk bands.
Yeah.
You know, then it turned to a point where you couldn't keep up anymore.
But that's the thing is, it's weird about, I don't know, like, I can't, people say, oh, what are the difference in the times? I don't know if the one's better or worse, because there's always good, and there's always good and bad at every time, you know? Right. It's all the same. But I do remember, like when we were on, Death Samantha was on Homestead Records.
And Byron was good friends with
Gerard, and he ended up, like, we didn't have an album. He was like, hey, would you guys be interested in doing something? And, but I remember, like, and I almost think maybe because I think they were trying to get people on that label that were maybe kind of just, I don't know, really excited about music in every town. Yeah. Because like
it's
Sonic
Youth. Kind of a version of SST.
And like, I know like...
That's the way I saw it. It was a lot different.
Yeah, very different, yeah.
But in a way, the ethic was the same.
Yeah.
Not going really for a label sound, more for enthusiastic.
For an attitude, yeah. And yeah.
Later on, it seemed the labels went for a brand sound.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Fat Records, you know.
Sure.
Epitaph.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't like that with Homestead and SST.
No.
You didn't really know, because the bands, they let them be.
Yeah. Well, I remember like then.
I'm not trying to say better or worse, but
no,
I kinda
of course.
I kind of like the.
But I like enthusiasm and attitude, man. I like what you're about.
And the idea of branding seems like you're trying to kick something, to hide something, to belong.
Yeah.
That's always scary.
Anyway, so check this out. So like they had like I think they wanted me to get bands shows on their label because they're like hey, could you get a Sonic Youth show? They're looking to play somewhere.
Of course.
And then Thurston calls me up and go, hey, would you want to play? I go, yeah, sure. There's a motorcycle bar that'll just. I mean, it was like two weeks before they were going to come to Cleveland.
No,
you know?
I believe. Look, man, it was about people in those days. It still is about people.
And you could get
got connections.
But you could get a ton of people. You get no press whatsoever, and you just call people up.
I'm talking about direct connection.
Yeah.
Oh man, when I found Raul, and this scene in the '90s happening here, they weren't even using the biker bar. They were using living rooms.
Mm-hmm.
These bands doing whole tours and they play houses.
Yeah.
Don't play one club. I go to this place on 4th Street here, and there's bands from, you know, Brooklyn and Portland.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're playing in the living room. And, you know, they get their merch and their old little...
Yeah.
Only thing that bummed me out, it could have been a little more wild with the music.
Yeah.
That's what always bummed me out about hardcore a little bit.
Because yeah.
I always loved the spirit and the spirit. More than the spirit.
Yeah, the thing is...
But then when it came to the music...
It was like fascism. Regular. Dude, it was like fascism to me. I could never get into hardcore. It was
let's hear your effect.
All right.
Morning comes, morning goes, morning comes, morning goes. When you go into a subway station, you enter a hole in the ground. And it's damp. And you're in an auditory house of mirrors. You have the feeling of entering into an altered state of consciousness when you're on a subway platform waiting for a train. Time seems to stand still. And yet your sense of it is highly attuned. And people's behavior is similar to that of animals in cages. Some pace absently up and down the platform. Some sit or lean against the wall or a pillar, staring blankly into the middle distance. The platform is dimly lit, and there are the tile walls covered with defaced advertisements, the concrete floors, the endless succession of columns and girders, lines of force stretching in front of you and down into the tunnel. And you can see that originally these subway stations were fine examples of innovative urban classic architecture, once noble monuments to the ingenuity and the determination of a confident and prospering city. But now they're besmirched, soiled, degraded, and defiled. In the old days, the cars had fans, stuffed wicker seats, handles on leather straps, a quaint metropolitan Art Deco style. But now the seats are cast out of a plastic mold. The handles are of metal. And the whole turnstile experience, the pelvic movement necessary to push your way through a turnstile, had a peculiarly suggestive feel to it, he thought. If one were to remove the turnstile, but have everyone go through the same motion as they passed into the subway, the sight of strangers from all walks of life queuing up to take one strong pelvic thrust at one another from behind would serve as a fine metaphor for the human condition. Early morning in the subway is a special time. The stations seem cleaner, the air fresher, and from 4:30 to 6:30 a.m. are the hours when the night people and the day people cross paths. When the tired partygoers, the musicians and waitresses, the dishwashers, janitors, the night watchmen, the pimps and the whores meet the early morning shift, the workmen, the domestics, the students who have to travel a long way. He liked standing on the platform and riding the subways at that time. And that's what he missed about his job at the church. And he liked the idea of an underground city. The sense of human ingenuity, of humans conquering the elements, of living in a completely artificial environment, like the kind of environment that might be built out in space or after a nuclear holocaust, long stretches of hallways with multi-level tiers, ramps, railings, escalators, rows of lights and columns. In some of the larger stations, the express stops, they sold food, clothes, books, records, newspapers, magazines, candy. You could even get a haircut or a shoe shine. You could buy a token, go into the subway, and you could travel any place in the city for free, for years, as long as you never came out. You can live below the surface of the earth. The place where Christianity had its first expression in Rome was beneath the surface of the city, in the catacombs, the very bowels of the city where Christians buried their dead. Where existed the great cities of the dead.
Don't let your baby grow up. בימים ההם ריחת הדובדבן גרמה לי לבכי, ולא ידעתי למה. חשבתי שזה בגלל כל הצער בעולם, ולא ידעתי, אין צער בעולם. יש רק סיסה איטית של הנפש, כמו עגבנייה מרכיבה בפוסטן נפוש, שהתולעים עושות בקי שלהן, ואין מה לעשות.
Dennis. Yeah.
Pedro show, we heard the Amphetamine. That's Samantha. Soli, that's got Spit Sticks. We had him on last
week. Yeah.
Fear Drummer, he's up in Portland now. Giving lessons, people learn. And that was Papi Chulo, not Cholo. Subway Stations Are an Underground World from Joe Frank. Lost him last month. Scarcity Tanks, that's Cleveland Cat. Matt Waskovich.
Wasco.
Every Little Pose. Wasco. John, something on Wasco?
I love Matt. I mean, he's a... The thing
well,
is,
there's a brand new Scarcity of Tanks.
I know. Well, there's a brand new Scarcity of Tanks record always coming out. I mean, if I come out here in 3 months, there'll be another one. The thing is, it's funny. Like, you look at places in Cleveland. I think that Matt, there is a mentality in Cleveland where kind of like out when Cumber Verde, we used to always call it the Cleveland Nasty, and we always think, you know, like
better than the steamer.
Well, no, yeah, better than the steamer. It always was like, you know, you go places. And you go to, it's kind of like, why keep up with the Joneses when you can bring them down to your level?
Yeah, right.
And it's like, basically like, fuck you, I want to do what I want to do, and I don't care what you think. That, Matt, what I like about Matt, I think he has a real, kind of real Cleveland, kind of like, I'm going to knock this out, and I don't, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm going to plow out the next record. And it's kind of an Ohio thing, too, in general.
Well, Baltimore, end of Pink Flamingos. I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I was in, dude, I went on a tour. Are you going to read up stuff? What do you read?
Yeah, got some more stuff. In those days, the Blumen from farther south, Disciplina Kichman.
Yeah, yeah.
Brother Koya, yeah. Akotie Glasno. And Vasco Adanasaki out of Skopje with So Arhengo Ke Te Vatsam demo. And finally, Riot Institute, Cobra Verde. I used to cover this song. I love it.
And you were in the video.
And I'm in the video in
a flannel bathrobe.
In a bathrobe.
Dude, I had a flannel shirt.
In there.
I brought a flannel shirt.
Fishing.
Who's
fishing? Just passed away.
George Wendt. Yeah. George Wendt is in it.
Right at the end of the first
and
hour.
Dolomite is in it, too.
That's
Dolomite
right.
is in it.
February 2nd, 2018. No, it's February 4th. Special guest John Pekovich, hold tight for hour 2. January.
Oh, were you saying about Wasco, though?
February 4th, 2018. It's the second hour. Watt from Pedro show.
as I raise a candle to the night.
But I will make a road to make. Jealous of a vibrator,
vibrator.
I'm a lover and not a hater,
not a hater.
Orgasms are friends of fair weather,
fair weather.
She likes us both, let's work it out together,
work it out together.
I'm not jealous of a vibrator,
vibrator.
I'm a lover and not a hater,
not a hater.
Orgasms.
I've tried.
Thank you. you. I bet that you say that all the time. Nothing on you.
Robert Mitchum got what he deserved. I just wish I could live in a gangster flick.
You're the girl who drives me off the cliff.
Candles in the Sun, Mal Divisa with Everybody Knows, Enco from Tu Asemi Co Lacelli Asvin Verdes, Feo with Moira Mardana, Cannonball Frog here, I'm Not Jealous of a Vibrator demo from M.B. Jones, Guided by Voices with Keep Me Down, Sweet Apple, A Girl and a Gun. So people, we were talking about the genesis of Sweet Apple. It comes out of a crisis. John lost his ma and lost a lot of weight, was smoking cigarettes and driving a lot, kind of wild ass. In fact, right out of Cleveland, east of almost Vermont, when he called up Dave Sweet Apple.
Yeah, he called me. He goes, where are you? Where are you? He goes, where are you? I have no idea where I am.
So he calls John, and John says, you don't really know, but maybe I'm close, and come on over. And then this is a kind of a tri-state area with Vermont, New York, and Massachusetts all come together. So Jay Maskus isn't that far. He comes and drives up. And then John feels like a whole bunch of songs inside him got unlocked from this kind of thing. And he just let out all this tuning. But he thinks this stuff might have even been there before. and it didn't come on from the sitch. It came on maybe from... So he says it's kind of like amnesia, where it's just something hits you and it triggers in all these memories that you thought were gone. And they turned out to be songs and tunes. And so that's where the first Sweet Apple album came. And then they've done a couple others since. This is the third one here. What's the title of this one?
Sing the Night in Sorrow.
See? Wow, so it's still on a sad vibe?
Well, but you know, but no, the thing is, man, I'm thinking is, what? The sadness is we have so much light. Like I was thinking, you know, people oftentimes historically think that terrible things happen when it's dark, right?
Yeah.
But we live in a world increasingly where there is limited darkness. It's all light. At every turn, you got these phones that are light. You got lights flashing. Yeah. You got the government can be trailing every move where you're going. You know, we have so much light that you cannot hide.
Yeah.
And that's the sadness. I think the sorrow will come when imagine like I had these things. Sometimes I have this like wake up at night. I can't sleep a lot of times. And I keep imagining, man, there's going to be a period of time where I'm not going to be able, there'll be light everywhere at every turn. It'll be lights from these phones. It'll be, you know, but you see, there's so many TV sets people watching. And that's quite a lot of times, man, I love my cat. I really, my best friend that I came also with the Sweet Apple thing around that time, my cat was like my best buddy. And I came to like look at an animal.
Yeah.
You spend time with an animal, the outer world doesn't exist anymore. And you think, sometimes you look at an animal, you spend all this time with a cat and it's just sitting there with you and it's like hanging out with you.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, the person that wants to be efficient in life says, I'm wasting all this time.
Yeah.
But you're gaining philosophically, I think.
Sure.
Because you are understanding the lifespan of that cat you must appreciate the lifespan of that cat. You must give rather than just to get.
Yeah, empathy.
You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, I think that's why I think is that I was thinking in those terms that, you know, that the darkness is something that I find a beautiful period where you are liberated, where no one doesn't see what you're doing.
Tomorrow night I get to go to the desert because Larry is doing the cat I did the last 2 years of Stooges tour with. He's producing a record from a singer in France. So I'm at that Rancho de la Luna.
Oh.
And there's something about the desert. You can actually see stars because
of
all the lights going. We got so much lights going.
Yeah. Dude, it's insane. It's like, it's insane. And the idea that you have to always, like, the news cycle is a 24-hour news cycle. And I work at a newspaper. And you see this bizarre, twisted, obsessive, like...
Moment to moment.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. You know?
It's not, maybe not that healthy. Not that healthy.
You know?
Makes us anxious, makes us kind of get in a weird kind of unreality.
Even the anger you have, people have.
Of course.
I don't have that anger, you know? I really don't. I mean, I might feel angry in the moment at certain things. Philosophically, I always think it's like, I mean, I grew up in a very different situation where my family was very anti-me playing music. They hated me playing music. They thought I was like a no-talent bum. And I kind of came to appreciate that, and that, you know, my parents were like, you know, I had a really hardcore, grew up in a hardcore environment, so little things that never really got to me that much, you know, because I lived a secret life. I never told my parents where I'd be going on tour. I'd go, I'm going on a vacation with some friends. Oh, yeah, well, where are you going? I was like, I don't know, a couple places around here.
Yeah.
You know, I was learned to be, like, vague and maybe evasive. Maybe that's not a good trait, to be vague and evasive.
Well, it worked for Clark Kent.
Yeah, it sure did. And,
right, wasn't that invented in Cleveland?
Superman, the guys were
in Cleveland. By Nazis.
Yeah. And,
you know that.
Wow.
That's like if the town he comes from, the planet, it's got some kind of Jewish.
Yeah, you land in Cleveland and it's like there's a big Clark Kent exhibit at the
and there's Jewish connects. And they were going after the Nazis in the Klan with comics.
Yeah.
Raymond wasn't first.
Yeah, man, and Howard the Duck was set in Cleveland.
That too.
Yeah, he's a Cleveland guy.
Howard the Duck.
You know, Howard the Duck. Dolomite got his start. Actually, the Dolomite, Rudy Ray Moore, he took his routine. There was a woman, Caledonia Jones, was a woman in Cleveland, and he got his routine from her. She was a woman who's like, I'll say,
no, I think I got recordings. She turned up told filthy ass.
Yeah.
There was a whole club circuit of these guys talking really fucking heavy.
Yeah. And also,
you know how Lenny Bruce had to deal with all the black clubs, they were doing this for years.
All the time, man, all the time. And then then Dolemite came to L.A. and he was doing this stuff where he'd selling his records under the counters and stuff like that. And then people started buying that shit and he started doing the Dolemite thing. But the funny thing is, so Dolemite was also, near the end of his life, he spent a lot of time in Cleveland too. And also he was influenced by LaWanda Page, who did Aunt Esther on Sanford and Son, Cleveland. Yeah, yeah. She was another Cleveland lady.
Okay.
And, so anyways, but he came to Cleveland and he'd be talking and it was like, he was not at all like the pimp guy. It was like, people think I'm this pimp guy. And he was like this guy who just like he thought it was a character. So so when he'd come to Cleveland, he had me go pimping with him. He goes, "Hey man, and like, hey, we gotta go pimping, but you gotta get dressed up." You know, so we'd go pimping and we'd go to these places and he'd just be sitting there like drinking his Moe. You know, they bring him his Bob, but he'd barely drinking it. He'd because I gotta drink this shit. I don't even drink. But I gotta drink this shit just to keep the appearances up. Otherwise, if I don't, they'll be laughing at me. You know, it'd be kind of one of these things where he pours it and then like dumps the glass. You know, but the funny thing is, you realize it was like all such a routine, and people took this shit seriously. You know, like you said about the one time the guy in the mirror was a guy in the mirror in the showbiz. What's that story?
That was the Romantics, and in downstairs of the Gore, I had something called Pop Shop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was two clubs.
Yeah.
One for the big acts.
Yeah, yeah. And that was in Cleveland. Was that in Cleveland? Yeah.
It was in red leather.
Yeah.
I saw it another time happen with Tito and the Tarantulas. Well, it was the Plugs first. It was Tarantula by this time. And, you know, I'm coming in the baño, I'm in the head. I'm not spying on dudes, but they're in the mirror fixing up their thing, and they see you in the thing. I was like, whoa, because that's showbiz.
Yeah.
Yeah, big DA. I think they're back, some of them.
But you know, I think showbiz there's a good thing about showbiz.
Yeah, of course.
Is that the good thing about showbiz, and I find it like what is, in some ways, it's hard to grasp, but there is this cult of authenticity.
Yeah, there's no people like show people.
No. Of course not. But what is currently hard to grasp is this kind of authenticity thing. It's like it's the biggest marketing bullshit. Trying to keep it real bullshit. What is keeping it real anyway?
Oh, you know, that
I don't know what real is.
I do. That Northeast Bayou that John Fogerty's born on. It's about
1,800
miles northwest.
Yeah. I mean, what is that all about?
New Orleans. It's pop art. Transcending reality.
Yeah.
That's what it's for. Can you imagine the first cave painting?
Yeah.
And the guy saying to his buddy, "What do you see?" What is that guy, like chromium zinc cave? No, man, it's a buffalo and I'm throwing his hair at it.
See, me and my brother, we were like,
you know, what is real, though?
What is real?
You analyze the atoms and the.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
You gather the provenance.
Yeah.
Like a fucking jive.
My parents grew up they're very poor. And they had a very, very, very hard life. I mean, very difficult. So then me and my brother, we came here. They came to America with nothing. They really did. They say, we came with nothing. They did come with nothing. And they wanted us to become responsible, like serious people.
Yeah.
You know, and then my brother and me, we were like, I was like a Dadaist already in the womb. Because it's like, we're born in this. Oh, my God, these people are serious in this reality. Everyone, all the people are so hardcore about reality. Oh, you need to work hard. So me and my brother, we just became like just surrealists. Not even we were trying to be in an aesthetic way. We were just we don't want this reality. Reality sucks.
The culture actually bred you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like we want the fake. Mm-hmm. We don't want the real.
No, what I want right now is the collab between you and Brother Matt and Spin Cycle.
But dude, I can't even play this guitar. It's like five strings.
Dive a doctrine, go away. Adapt you there.
Brother Matt, thank you so much for doing what you just did to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Why?
Thanks for joining us.
And I hope you were up a lot louder in the mix than I was.
The inspiration, motivation, urgency to do what you just did to us.
Well, I was trying to get something for some open G tuning, since we were kind of limited on there. And,
Brother
and
Matt's
start
got a
with
guitar sitting around here, and some, it is tuned open string 5. We're talking 5-string open tuning, which...
So I should have been playing the open G, like just moving it up like that, huh?
It can give you a slide.
Capo?
We had the cliche.
Whenever you were in the moment, how'd you feel about collaborating with Brother Matt there?
I love watching him do what he does.
What about
I enjoyed
what about you,
watching him do what he does more than listening to him hearing back what I was doing.
First time ever on a 5-string open tune?
I never played on a 5-string open tune G.
Well, that's why we had you aboard. Wet and drenched in that kind of zone.
So wait a second. So how many projects do you have now?
I got a buttload.
Like how many? A boatload?
Well, as far as recording this year, 2018, I turned 60 2 months ago. So I wanted 2018 to be the year of composing and recording. So no touring for me this year. So, of course, there's my 3 trios. They all need an album. And then there's these other projects that are just more like recording things, like another Big Walnuts Yonder, another Socktight. In fact, 2018 Record Store Day is going to be a Socktight EP. But then
so I had like about 20 more songs I was going to send you via the internet. So you're not going to be able to have time for that, huh?
I would love to play on your stuff. I would love. I was invited.
Dude, you know what I want to do?
Stuff. I think on the second
album,
right? That never came to be.
Dude.
Yeah.
I don't know if you play, like, I go, man, I'd like to do a really overloaded, kind of like primitive sounding record. I don't know if it's something you'd be interested in.
Sure. Tomorrow I go to the desert to make an album with Larry.
Yeah.
The guy did the last 2 years.
Like caveman, not even caveman rock, but just really primitive, like very, very basic
elements.
I did
a Christmas record for Taff Falco last summer in Memphis.
Yeah.
And I played a Beatle bass. I got a Beatle bass from China, Hofner. And I played pretty...
It sounded good?
I played pretty primitive. I remember I did a session last November with Jim Kelvin, and he pointed to up on the neck of my bass guitar, the higher frets.
Yeah.
He said, upper register, and then he pointed to where the strings, low strings are, way up there by the nut.
Yeah.
And he said, cash register. Okay, we're at the end of the second hour. February 4th, 2018, edition of Walk Pedro Show. Special guest John Pekovich, Brother Matt. Let's hold tight for hour 3. Dude. February 4th, 2018,
okay,
it's the third hour
the Walk from Pedro. Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. We start the third hour off with Now It's Your Tune to Be a Martyr, Death of Samantha. Alberto Bocardi and the Stefano Pellizzari. The Bastet Part 1, brand new. DMF with Nuts, David Gerard and Winbet. They're out of Massachusetts. Part 2 of Travelogue. Flying Hair with Phase 2. They're from down here in SoCal. And finally, Harlequin Tragedy by Death of Samantha. Harlequin Tragedy. That's kind of a streets.
Yeah.
What were you thinking of?
I don't know.
Pavarotti?
Dude, I don't know. I don't remember. Dude, I don't remember any. I mean, I have a bad memory. No, because of the guy.
The Harlequin, though?
Huh?
What's his name? Puccini? Made the opera? Yeah. Some sad.
I don't know, man. I have no idea. But you know what? Do you think about it?
That's your first band, right?
The first band,
so that's where you're first writing songs?
Yeah. Yeah, I met Doug. I met him
The band I wrote first for was Reactionaries, and them songs are so embarrassing.
Yeah.
I put 10 Death of Samantha songs about 100,000 times.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, dude, I met Doug. The guitar player. I met him at a...
He's playing with Bob now.
Yeah.
I just played here about 2 months ago.
And I met him at an amusement park.
The guy is playing really good.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. Doug is an amazing guitar player, man.
I mean, he...
Dude,
I've seen
insane.
Guy by Voices a few times with Doug, and man, he's
an amazing guitar player. An amazing.
In fact, I wrote him right after. And also Bob, and also the bass man and the drumming. Everybody, they had a new guy on the other guitar. Kind of a beardo guy that they didn't have.
Yeah.
But man, the band was cooking.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that band so hot. And I think a lot of it is Doug. I mean, Doug is just way on his game.
He's an amazing guitar player.
Wow. And I've heard some of his Doug Gillard stuff.
He's great. He's really talented. You know, the thing is, it's weird.
So where'd you meet him?
At an amusement park. I mean, he was at a high school. He was like in high school. I met as a high school. We happened to meet in an amusement park. We went with our schools. We had to go, and neither of us wanted to be there. Yeah. And like, we just like, I think met like by a hot dog stand or something like that, and then started talking. I'm like, oh man, I'm like, oh, this sucks. Yeah, this sucks too. I'm like, oh, what do? You play music, and you could tell. You know, the funny thing is, people say, they call that term gaydar, but. With us, gaydar. With music, you know, gaydar, you could tell, I could tell you're gay. I could tell you're into music. I could tell. I could tell, I could tell that someone was into music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could tell right away. It just something. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was like, for instance, I knew that the second edition Public Image Limited album was going to be good. And I just thought, well, it's going to be a good record. I bought it, and I really liked that record. I could tell certain things.
Was the second one the can?
Second edition of the can, but it was also the great one. Fucking
that's
great
got
record.
The
pop tones.
Yeah, right. Big bass and good drum groove.
Yeah, bass.
I got an interview with Jaw Wobble. I think he's the bass man.
Yeah.
He told me he's on some of the drums.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know he did
the
drums.
He said even Johnny Rotten played some of the drums. Yeah, I thought it was all Martin Atkins, right?
Yeah.
Because they got rid of the gym guy.
Yeah.
He told me the first album guy, something happened, so... But he said he's on some of the drums.
Yeah.
That is a great album.
It's a great album. But, but I could tell right away.
45, 12 inches.
But, then you could tell, and the weird thing is.
Oh.
Go ahead.
There was a Doug Gillard solo band that had Tony on bass.
Really?
They came out here. It was a trio.
I don't know.
It lasted only a little time.
Yeah, Doug is so good. But, man, it's like, the thing is, it's interesting. You look at, because everyone can be friends with everyone that has a similar specific tastes.
Yeah.
Now you can meet on Facebook and all this other stuff. Oh, you're into this. You're into the same 100 bands I'm in. Death of Samantha, Doug, I could just tell he was into music. I didn't even know what he was into, but I could tell I wanted to play with this guy. Dave James, the bass player, he just did these little fanzines and all stuff. And I was like, oh man, this guy's really into music. Yeah. And then the drummer, he didn't know anything about any of the music. He knew Elvis and the Beatles. Yeah. He didn't give a shit about underground music. I remember a Death Samantha played with Gun Club. And Jeffrey Lee Pierce, he goes, and Steve-O was trying to ingratiate himself to to these different bands. I've always been a big fan of Gun Control. He thought the band was called Gun Control. He had no idea what the Gun Club was. And Jeffrey Lee Pierce was like, who is this asshole?
We had Ward Dodson on the show, and Jeffrey actually got him to play that stuff. He was new too. Yeah. It blew my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeffrey.
Oh man,
I first knew about Jeffrey from his writing.
Yeah,
he was a writer
for Slash, right?
He was ranking Jeffrey Lee Pierce.
Yeah.
He was cool people.
Man, I love, dude, so that's the man that played with the Gun Club, and we ended up drinking their vodka. Me and Steve-O drank their vodka. He was really pissed, but then they got another bottle of vodka, and he was like, then he really loved us. He's like, man, you guys, he thought that we had the cool, that we had the balls to drink their vodka, you know? And me and the guy, we kept on talking. We drank, like, me and Steve-O drank all their vodka, and we kept on talking. He goes, man, I respect this guy. That would have been Kid Congo.
Kid Congo?
Yeah, yeah.
Great cat. He's got a band now called Monkey Birds.
Yeah.
Monkey Birds.
And the thing is, it's funny, is like that in that band, what I'm saying is, we were just like music, and you could tell, but you didn't know, we weren't like, oh, you know every Bauhaus record, or you know every, know every Cramps record.
No, I...
Yeah. And now, all these, that's the
like
thing.
Jim O'Rourke, when you go up to Jim O'Rourke, it'll be some question like this. Second Faust album or third? That's going to define your character.
Yeah. But see, that's kind of, that's why, in some ways, I think it's like the music, it's got to be an aesthetic rather than to know, you're not collecting stamps. Even though, actually, if you were collecting stamps, it'd be more interesting because there's a lot of his revised stamps. Collecting the second or the third or debating what record is, it's just kind of dumb, right?
No, it's what kind of person you are.
Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous, right?
Or you wanted that.
Because I always thought, oh, wow.
First Faust album.
Do you know, if people, I've always found that if you ask people, oh wow, what do you think about this? And if they give you the right answer, I go, I don't want to have nothing to do with this person. I'd rather talk to someone that don't know shit about whatever they're talking about and just have some crazy.
Oh, it's big time that way with the Magic Band.
Yeah.
You know, the Tragic Band. Stay away from Moon Beats and Blue Beats,
It's like, that band.
You like that? Oh, you're one of them. But I heard about a gig that the captain did in Akron.
Yeah.
And everyone was there. Mark Mothersbaugh told me about this.
Oh, really?
There was this club. I don't know what it was called, but everybody, you were talking about the two scenes.
Yeah.
They were at this gig.
Yeah.
And it was the captain. I think it was Doc, or it might have been Shiny Beast. One of the last tours.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody came that turned into bands.
It's weird. Cleveland was, like, and Akron in general. It was, like, you know, for instance, you look at, like, Roxy Music. They were, you know, they would say arena rock. Roxy Music was an arena rock band.
Yeah.
You know, David Bowie was an arena rock band.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's all these things like that are like the things of music that was very popular. Like the Stooges were very popular in Cleveland.
Yeah.
The Velvet Underground was very popular. Right. So that's why when people say, oh, you know, I didn't even know what... To me, popular wasn't a bad thing because a lot of cool stuff was popular. And growing up as a kid, I go, oh, man, I hear this band, you know, like a... You know, really good. You know what I mean?
Styx.
I don't know about Styx. I never saw those guys. But you know what? The funny thing is, Styx was playing some casino, and I go, man, you know, I should just break down and see some of this shit rock. You know what I mean? And like, see what it's really like. Maybe it'd be great. Maybe it'd be like, maybe these guys are just like, it'd be right now. It'd be great to see something like that. You know what I mean?
Okay, we're gonna hear some Sad Plans.
All right.
Thank you.
Pedro Show, last music for this edition, City Ghosts from Sad Planets, Rest for the Wicked, Isotope 217, The Mesthetics, that's a new band with Joe Lally and Brendan from Fugazi, Serpent Tongue, Super Freak after that, out of Milano, Jesus, and finally, Death of Samantha with Geisha Girl. What's Geisha Girl about? What are people writing about?
I don't even know. You know what you're saying about Styx? I thought about this. Styx is a geographical place, right? It's a river in hell, right? And I was thinking, all those bands, how about this? There is Styx, Kansas, another geographical entity band that sucked.
John Brown was on the cover.
Yeah, Kansas, that band sucked too. How about Asia?
Yeah.
How about there's
a band? Oh, wow, that's England. John Wetton.
But they suck, too.
Well, it was going to be Greg Lake, but he was too fat.
What about Europe? That was another shitty band aimed at a geographical entity. There's a band called Toronto. There's a band called Toronto that sucked, too.
I played with a band last year at a benefit, the drummer of Jawbox, or Jawbreaker, and it was called California. I said, why do you call the band California?
Yeah, why would you call it after a geographical entity? Maybe if it's a fake geographical entity, that's fine. You know what I mean? If it's one in your mind, again, it gets back to the authenticity.
Yeah,
if you can create a fake place, that's more than more interesting than the real place.
But I think the real name of Joy Division was Fashal.
Warsaw, right?
Yeah, Warsaw.
But like Asia, Kansas, Styx, there's all these bands, they were like...
Boston,
another shitty band. Dude, there's not any good, you know? That's why I'm glad that Death Samantha, we didn't call it Parma. You know what I mean? There was a band called Cleveland, though. There was a band, and they sucked, too. It's like, fuck, man.
Blood Rock, Ohio?
Huh?
Blood Rock.
I don't think so. Oh, no, yeah, I think they were.
They were tough. They were trippy for 70s.
Yeah.
I can't believe you didn't go to 70s. Concerts.
I was too young.
That's all right. No wine before it's time.
Oh, but dude,
what do you got planned next, John?
Well, I'm gonna wander around and take some pictures in California. You're talking about while I'm here in California?
Yeah.
Southern
California.
I'm doing taking photos. I'm tracking down. I went to I had this thing where I've been wanting to track down places that were locations in movies. Like I found the apartment block for Long Goodbye. Man, I interviewed.
Go to East LA where those bridges go over the hill. Yeah, they're like a 10-minute movie.
Yeah, but check this out. There was Robert Altman. I interviewed Robert Altman, you know, the filmmaker. And it was like, it's funny. One of my favorite filmmakers.
Sure.
And I would write about movies. I write about
Popeye, right?
Yeah, Popeye, not good. But one of my favorite films was Long
Goodbye. What's that name about anyway? The pipe was too close.
I didn't get
the
Popeye.
The pipe was too close. I think it dried up the tear duct.
But I love Long Goodbye, one of my favorite films.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I love that movie. And I was like, I remember interviewing him, and I was like, and he was like great. He was like, usually a big director goes 10, 15 minutes. He would talk bullshit for like about an hour and a half. Or something. He kept on talking.
Spieler.
All kind of total spieler. And I go, man, I love that Long Goodbye. He goes, oh, man, that movie. I couldn't take that movie. I go, why? And it's like, I love that movie. It's one of the greatest films ever. Man, walking up them stairs.
Oh.
Because he had to walk up them stairs to get to the apartment block. And I was like, I thought he would just pull him. I'm like, dude, I play basketball every day. I fucked up my knee.
No, there's some hills.
Dude, it's 23 flights of steps. And that's only about three quarters of the way up to the apartment block in the movie.
There's a famous picture of Art Pepper. You know Art Pepper's
Yeah, sure.
Intro. In Echo Park, going up one of them hills.
It's insane.
More intense than the city, San Francisco.
I was like holding onto the rail. I was like, this sucks. Cause I fucked up my knee just about like 3 days ago playing basketball before I came out here. I was like, my God. It's like,
I don't know if basketball is a less younger man's sport.
I play basketball every day.
Dude, yeah, but.
You know what? You want to hear about songs?
You're a more younger man, but as you become less young.
No, I'll tell you, but basketball to me is a yoga without the spiritual baggage. Because. I go shoot hoops. When I'm alone in the gym, I find a gym. I wrote probably on that last Sweet Album record, probably about three quarters of the songs written while playing basketball. Yeah. Words, music, everything.
I totally am into it. You know when there's this great semantic fight over rehearsal and practice?
I practice.
Yeah. You tell me one guy playing basketball who goes to rehearse.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Hey, excuse me. We have basketball rehearsal tonight. I mean, basketball was like, that's like the drama club does the rehearsal, right? But then when people start saying, we need a rehearsal, they're like, I need to wear a tuxedo too?
Yeah, that's
you
great. Breaking the arm, patting the cell phone.
And what is that all about?
Jive.
But see.
Self-entitled. It's trying to like get away without having to do any work.
Yeah.
Off of the craft. Come up with a tune.
Yeah.
Come up with a melody. Come up with a rhythm.
Yeah.
It's all making excuses so you don't have to get to there.
Yeah.
It's all this you know.
Dude, it's nonsense.
Front.
I find it funny because I always think it's like when people, I know some people, I've come to like to look at this, and this might sound arrogant. I find that people that take themselves seriously, they're very insecure about themselves.
That's because why they're taking themselves
seriously. You have to take yourself seriously. I take most things as a joke to me. Yeah. And they're like, oh, what are you, a clown? Or like,
no, there was that Cleveland band.
Dude, the All Sports. There was a band called the All Sports.
Humor Me.
Who?
Humor Me.
I don't know that.
Terubu.
Oh, yeah. Dude, do you know that
there was. He goes, it's just a joke, man.
There was
and
a band.
He goes, laugh like this.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very
good. Because you find it like it's insane to think about it. I mean,
hey,
look.
Thomas, very good lyrics.
What you think about it is people take this shit so seriously, and who's to say that, I mean, I don't know, man.
Oh, that's right. He goes, here's the punchline. You die.
Yeah. But that's
laugh
it.
Laugh like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. You know, humor me.
Yeah.
Here, get ready for the punchline. Now you die.
Yeah, but it's like it's kind of funny. That's kind of the thing is humor was something that me and my brother we grew up in. Like I said, we just laughed about everything. Yeah. Everything was a joke to us, you know.
Yeah, Rip, Rick, and Panic was named after Roland Kirk's song. It had a couple of the guys from Pop Group.
Yeah,
and they had a song when they came out with their big record. You know what are they going to sound like? And the first song is called Knee Deep in Shit. And a guy says one of the lyrics towards the end. He goes, you know, if Jesus would have laughed when he was crucified, his killer would have been petrified.
Yeah. I know.
Knee deep in shit, man. And it's a trippy, the cover.
Yeah.
They called the album God. And what they did was take a National Geographic film of a monkey just about to get eaten by a leopard. And it's the frame right before the teeth get him.
Yeah.
So the look in the monkey's eyes, he's looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of creative.
I work at a newspaper, where, and in that business, everyone takes themselves very seriously.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't, I just, it's like, it's a joke. This shit's a joke, man. I mean, and we this news, you know, they say, oh, fake news and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, you can't take anything seriously. You have to live your life. And I think now even, you know, people get so worked up. Man, create something. I know it sounds corny, but if you just create something, like at work, they have all these layoffs at the plane dealer. And one of the people there, she's like, oh, man, you laugh about everything. And you could be like, you could find out that, you know, we're getting layoffs and all this stuff. You don't seem to care. You don't care about anything. I, you know, if I was to go to jail and be tried, convicted, and put on a firing squad, I'd probably be laughing, too. And the thing is there's this book, this Vladimir Nabokov book, one of my very influential book to me, Invitation to Beheading.
Oh, yeah.
A guy is in jail. He walks out of the book. He just, the book ends, it falls apart, they're going to execute him. And he just decides, you know what, I'm going to walk out of this book right now, and this book's going to fall apart, and they ain't going to execute me.
Yeah, there's a Edgar Allan Poe, Incredible Journey of G. Gordon Pym, it's like an acronym of his name. And at the end he goes, reader, I can't keep telling you this story, that is bullshit.
Yeah. It's like there's.
You do have that power in your life.
You could just walk out sometimes.
That's the existential thing. At the end of the day, you get to decide. Yeah.
You know, and that's why people are looking for all this spiritualism. I mean, I'm not against that. I understand people find whatever they do. You have. But if you really do have the imagination, it sounds corny, you know. But if you do have a dream, and not like dream like I had. I mean, I just like, dude, I love to take pictures in the desert by myself. And I just love to do that. I just love images. You see, you start realizing with camera, I love to take photos. Because you start realizing there's background and there is foreground. We are so obsessed with our eye is foreground, the main image. But there's also the central, everything around it. B-roll. Why do they call it B-roll in movies? It's like, oh, I'm going to go shoot some B-roll. Actually, the B-roll could be the A-roll because maybe that person, maybe the B-roll is the overwhelming character in this whole thing and the individual is just caught in this little thing. But we call it B-roll because we're so obsessed that we think that we can do all these things. If you almost don't believe in anything. I love, one thing I like, Marlon Brando. He renounced acting as some great craft. He mocked acting. I respected that. I was proud. Wow, Marlena Dietrich.
He could have been a somebody.
He could have been. But with a sense of humor, it wouldn't have mattered. But dude, Marlena Dietrich, I used to read.
A contender.
I love, I read this story about Marlena Dietrich. She'd go on tour. And she put out a live record. Then she'd have people come over and everything, and they'd have dinner parties. And they'd say, oh, how was your tour? I'd go, okay. And she'd take the record. Let me tell you how the tour was. She'd go to play the crowd noise in between the songs.
Yeah, of course.
And she's like, that was the tour. And it's like, it was funny, you know? She didn't take herself seriously, you know? I think that you have to, like, almost, it's almost the act of doing it is what's important, not, like, what you care about, what you did, you know what I mean? I never, honestly, I don't listen to records when they're done. When I put out a record, fuck it. I want to rebel. I'm going to throw that record away. I mean, it's great that you appreciate it. People buy it. Mm-hmm. It's appreciate anyone listens to it and cares. But you just want to go on to the next one, you know?
Okay, so that's in the future. Next one.
The next
Put
one?
Some pictures.
What's that?
That's your next plan.
So oh, to take photos. I'm going to take. No, I'm going to take photos. I'm going to go right outside in the backyard here and take a picture from the Big Lebowski. I was in.
Duncan City.
Oh, Venice. I went to Venice Beach. I took a picture of the building where Marlena Dietrich walks out where she sees Orson Welles in Touch of Evil. It's still there. It's now surf shop. Yeah. It's like some corny, tacky surf shop. But it was in Touch of Evil. It's the building. You know, so I've been driving all around L.A. taking pictures of buildings and stuff like that.
Cool. All right.
I'm sorry if I talk too much. I know why. I know you're probably like you're probably bumming. You're like, man, this guy's a loudmouth. Get him out of the house.
Oh, man.
No, we like guests to talk and have something to say.
Everybody's got their own journey with
yeah.
music. How many, 16 years we've been doing this, huh, Brother Matt? Nobody has the same story.
Yeah.
No one has the same journey, so we fucking are very grateful for you fucking bringing it.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool having you in, Pedro.
Well, thanks.
Thank
I love
you're
Pedro.
You're always essential, amen, band, Brother Matt.
Pleasure.
John Pekovich, have a good time in Cali before you go back to warm Cleveland.
Yeah, 5 inches of snow today.
How long are you
here for? I'm here for about another 4 days.
Okay. Have a good time, and we really enjoyed you having a board.
Yeah, great having you.
Thank you so much.
Respect the music, even though it's gone. Once you do it, that's okay.
Yeah, whatever.
People out there, it's been February 4th, 2018. Just a Wild Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.
Yeah.